Precious Harav Shlita, thank you for the opportunity of being here again. Now that we are through Tishri and we're in full swing in the new year, our first topic which we're dealing in this season is email and the halacha. Originally I thought I'd write email and faxes, but I was asked, no, leave it just as email. Sounds good. Well, we will deal with faxes as well. What implications does something modern have for us in halacha? A person who is involved in Torah should always ask himself or herself, when something new crops up, what has the Torah got to say about this? What are the halachas? What are the dinim which apply? And also maybe what moral lessons can I learn from such a thing? The question of fast communication is slightly something we dealt with several months ago when we spoke about technology in halacha. And something I alluded to then, I'm going to just repeat now to start off with. And that is, when the Mashiach comes, please God, speedily in our days, and we've got the Beis HaMikdash again, we've got the Kiddush HaChodesh again, there will be the need to communicate with outsiders, outside communities, when Rosh Chodesh is. And the question is there, will it be possible to use these modern methods of communication? Originally, when they sent out Shaluchim from the Beis Din, it says in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, they'd actually lit bonfires first. They let out bonfires on the hills, and that spread the word very quickly through the communities that it was Rosh Chodesh. But when the Kusim came along and tried to spoil things for us, and they were lighting bonfires with false alarms, then it was decided to have to send out personal shaluchim on horseback to spread around the word when Rosh Chodesh is. So the question, of course, is that when Mashiach comes, speedily in our days, will it be possible to use the modern methods of communication to tell people when is Rosh Chodesh? So, to send out an email. Or do we say no? It won't be in the same spirit as former times, or it won't be the minhag of same biodenu, or you might say there may be hoaxers who will try and send out hoax emails, and therefore maybe that will not be reliable. Since there is no clear-cut need in halacha on the method, what's implied is the reliability, not the method. That when the Kusim tried to spoil things, then they used a different method, but it was only because it was necessary to stop hoaxes. So if it's possible to send out emails from the Beis Din to announce when it's Rosh Chodesh, maybe by the use of a password or something like that, then it doesn't seem any reason why that should not happen. And that way, the message will spread around easily that it's Rosh Chodesh. A fax might not be good enough because a signature on it might be a hoax if it's a photocopy which has it transposed and then faxed. On the other hand, if there is some sort of password, there seems to be no reason why this shouldn't be the case. Unless somebody says, well, let's keep up the minhag of old. Minhag Yisrael Torah, for some reason. And that is important, Minhag Yisrael Torah. We like to keep up certain traditions because there was an idea attributed to them we don't always know. There was a story about the Noda Behuda. The Noda Behuda was once asked about a sacred Torah which they found and they didn't know whether it was kosher or possum. You don't know who wrote it. So he said, look at the last few lines of the sacred Torah. And if you find that the letters have rather jagged edges, then that will show that it was an Orthodox community where the tradition is that people gather around and people take turns to fill in the last letters, and of course they're not so expert like the Sofrim are, and you get jagged edges to those letters. And if you find a Sefer Torah with these jagged edges, Minhag Yisrael Torahi, that is a kosher Sefer Torah. Whereas if it's all clean and pure and exact, then maybe it was written by somebody from the Reform or whatever it is, where they didn't have this tradition. Minhag Yisrael Torah. So that's something which we want to bear in mind. Okay. The question which I want to now put is, there are certain things in halacha where you can ask, you have to do something in writing, can it be done by email? Can it be done by fax? Perhaps the classic thing which the Torah talks about in terms of writing, the kosav law is get. But yet, it says Kosav Lo, it has to be Venosom Beyodo, it has to be given into her hand. So it would be very clear just from that alone, and from the various principles we know from the Gemara and Gittin, that a man cannot send a get by email or by fax. It has to be done in the traditional way of being written and being put into her hand. But what about selling chometz? If one has to sell one's chometz before Pesach, is it good enough to send an email to the rabbi of your shul and say, please sell my chometz for me? Is that valid in halacha, or isn't it? There is also the question, when the rabbi goes to meet the goy, can the rabbi use fax or email? So there are really two aspects to it. When you instruct your rabbi to sell for you, and when the rabbi goes to the non-Jewish person. So, the question is, it could be email or fax. So what activities are needed in order to effect the sale validly, and of course we don't want to do any mistakes when it comes to Mechiras Chometz, because of the issue of Bayurai Bayimotze. Now according to the Taz and the Bach, in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Tov Mem Ches, when one sells one's chometz, one should really be handing over a key. Now I don't think it's the practice in this Kehillah when you sell a chometz to be asked to hand over a key. I was once asked when I was in Israel to give a key for the cupboard where the chometz was situated. Now if a key has to be handed over, then a fax or an email would obviously not be enough. However, if it can be shown that a key is not necessary, then maybe an email or fax would be sufficient.
A combination lock.
There seems to be a number of reasons why some poskim like to have a key handed over. The first one is given by the Noda Behuda, who says that the purpose of the key is to show that the sale is genuine. It's not a haroma, that you're not cheating. Oh well, you know, I'm selling a 1,000 crates of whiskey and I'm going to buy them back next week. Is that a genuine sale? The key demonstrates, he says, that one is sincere in one's intention to sell the chometz. Another reason is given by the Shaul Meshin. He says that a key should be handed over to avoid appearing like a shomer socha, that one's just hiring, or one is paid to look after the goods. The key gives the impression of a proper sale. Another view, the Shavile Dovid says, from the Steich Emet, it's advisable to hand over a key because it enables a non-Jew to have immediate access to the chometz at any time. This method is preferred by the Shalosh Shuvos Shevet HaLevi, because he says, though, that if the key is not handed over, it's still a valid sale, but it's the dievet. Ideally, there should be a key. So what do we learn from this? It's not the practice to require a key for the chometz to be handed over. It's enough that the purchaser has access to the chometz at any time. That the person should be able, the guy should be able to knock on your door during Pesach and say, I've come to retrieve my chometz. I know of a case where it once happened. And he came in and he started helping himself and there was nothing they could do about it. So then we can come back to our original question. If the key is not essential, then can the chometz be sold by fax? Or shall we say there is some other physical activity which might be needed in order to validate the sale? When you have a sale, you make a kinyan, or you transfer. A person who gives over his makneh transfers, and the person who acquires does a kinyan. So on Sukkot, when you give over your lulav to somebody else, it has to belong to you on the first day, you are makneh to the other person, and the person is koneh. With a child can acquire it, but can't be makneh to somebody else. So the child should be left to the end of your series of handing overs, because that child, once it belongs to him, can't really give it over to somebody else. So do we need some kind of activity when you sell your chometz? Because if you're just sending an email, that's not a kinyan, or is it? On the other hand, when you instruct your rabbi to sell the chometz, do you have to make a kinyan at all? I mean, the Shulchan Aruch says in Choshen Mishpot that when you make a shaliach, because the rabbi is really your shaliach, your agent. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, Ein os shaliach tzorech kinyan. When you appoint an agent to effect a transfer on your behalf, you don't need to make any kinyan with him. You just say to him, sell my chometz. It's good enough. So, when you appoint your rav as the shliach, you don't need to make any form of kinyan. The Chassam Sofer says, if you send a letter in the post to your rav, That is enough in order to sell your chametz. And the modern sefer, the Siddur Pesach Kilchosa, says it's enough to phone up your rav and say, look, sell my chametz for me. So it follows from this that one can certainly ask one's rabbi by means of an email or by fax to sell one's chametz. It is in fact the practice in Israel, for radio listeners to be told by a rabbi that they can fax into the radio office with an instruction to sell their chametz for Pesach. So then we got a more difficult question. Okay, you can send an email to your rabbi in order to sell your chametz, but what about when the rabbi deals with the goy? Can he sell by fax or by email? Because when the rabbi deals with the goy, surely there some sort of kinyan might be necessary. What form of kinyan is needed? For example, when you have a payment of money, that effectively makes a contract. An exchange, a kinyan chalipin, lifting up an article, but there's a kinyan mashicho. What form of kinyan is necessary when you sell chometz? And this all hedges round whether the rav can sell by email. Chok Yaakov says that ideally when chometz is sold there should be some money changing hands, because that affects a proper kinyan. Many poskim say that ideally there should be two different forms of kinyan, lechat chila. But it's a chumra. If there's just one, it's good enough. It's sufficient, according to the Me'iri and Avodah Zarah and other poskim, that if there is money changing hands, that in itself creates the kinyan. However, when you send a fax, when you send an email, is there any money changing hands? Some might say that when you send an email, it's a shtar, it's a document. And there is such a thing as kinyan shtar. But it's learned out from the Gemara in Kiddushin, ein kinyan shtar l'nochri, that a non-Jew does not acquire by means of a document. There has to be money changing hands.
Can you transfer money electronically?
Well, we'll come to that in a moment. Electronic transfer.
The money has changed hands.
What I was going to say was, if the email contains an instruction with a credit card number, with an expiry date and the amount, that is accepted as a kinyan kesef nowadays, right? I mean, nowadays you book a flight, you phone you email EasyJet, you don't even get a ticket. You send an email with your credit card number, expiry date, and you've done a kinyan. That is really my conclusion. But thank you. When will the kinyan take place?
When you give him the number, or when he has to get the money?
When you give the number.
I think when you give the number, because when you get a check. When you get a check, when does the kinyan take place?
When you give the check.
When you're given a check, if the check bounces, you can sue on the fact that it bounced. So I think most possibly will agree that once you're given a check, that is a kinyan, because the check is a promissory note, and it's like regarded like kesef. Actually, there is a rule in the Ramon Kosher Mishpat. If a buyer and a seller agree to a deal, and without any of these methods recognized by the Torah, but they use a method which they recognize between them, then that could be a kinyan. The Chasam Sofer says a sale could be effected even by a handshake. Have you noticed that in the diamond trade, sometimes they shake hands and they say mazel and bracha? And when they say mazel and bracha, that is regarded as a kinyan. However, That kinyan called kinyan tumta is not necessarily enough, according to many poskim, for the sale of chometz. And there should be some other form of kinyan, such as kinyan kesef. Certainly, if you've got the idea of a mere handshake, then there's no doubt about the fact that facts might be good enough. Anyway, there is also the question of dina d'malchus sedina. When you affect the sale of chometz, does it have to conform to the laws of the land? If it has to conform to the laws of the land, then by sending a fax, that certainly can't be enough. Because according to the law of the land, the sale can only be effected if there is consideration of the contract, which means money exchanging hands. So, if the non-Jew can respond by fax, giving his credit card number, the card expiry date, says to me, a deal is done. There is another problem. When people sell chometz, they like to sell the property in which the chometz is located. I think there's a bit of a problem there in a number of ways. People sell their kelim. If you buy the kelim back afterwards, you have to tovel them in a mikvah. But people sell the kelim and they sell the property. They sell the whole factory sometimes. Now, if you do that, then also there you've got the din of the malchus adina question, the law of the land. Because to effect that, you need a proper deed. English law requires such a formal deed of sale, and there's no way an email or a fax would be admissible as evidence that a contract has taken place. So there is another question. What if the sale conforms to Jewish law but does not conform to English law? There is a machlokas for poskim in that. The Shuvos Yaakov says that if the kinyan is valid in Jewish law, even if it's invalid according to one's own national law, the sale of the chometz would still be valid. But there are others, such as the Ma'arit, who disagree, and they say the chometz must be sold according to the law of the land as well. So, if you sell by such a method, then, with the credit card number, expiry date, it seems as though that will be okay.
What are you saying? What is the opinion that's written by the law of the land?
No, din of Malchus Adina doesn't apply when it conflicts with the law of the Torah. It can only be used when it complies with the halacha.
When you said the handshake, didn't you say the handshake, which is not necessarily.
Right. The view of the Chasam Sofer was because that's an acceptable method between the two parties, that they can agree on their own mode of kinyan. Yeah, I don't think the poskim would agree that a handshake would be enough for selling chometz. But maybe on other things as well. But the chometz we want to be really, we want to be watertight. I was thinking myself, maybe we've recently been doing the mitzvah, or call it the mitzvah, the takana of Prusbul, towards the end of the Shemitah year, well, in order to make sure that our debts can be recovered, and we don't lose out, Hillel instituted the din of Prusbul, and I was wondering whether a Prusbul could be affected by email. What is a Prusbul? You are actually instructing three people who are a Beis Din to take over your debts. So in a way you are makne to them something. I don't know whether the practice here was when you sat with a rav to do some sort of kinyan chalipin, but it's generally thought of in the poskim as not necessary to effect anything other than you declare in front of the three Dayanim that you hand over to them your debts, and they sign to the effect that they accept and they can enforce and recover debts for you. And it seems to me, according to that, there's no reason why it shouldn't be done by email. If you email a group of three people and they sign something and they agree to effect the debts for you, it seems as though for Prusbul, in any case, Prusbul is less of a problem like chometz, because Prusbul is a takona, it's a rabbonon, but it's applicable in chutzlaretz and so on. We would be more lenient in halacha.
You don't know whether, unless they acknowledge it, you don't know whether
they've actually done it.
And therefore, you have to sign
a chometz, anyway. Well, certainly with chometz, you need. Yeah, well, the goy has to send you his credit card number in order to effect the payment. If you don't receive it,
then payment.
That's true. If you email the Rav, and the Rav can't get the email.
But hold on. You can't send. If you send somebody the details of your credit card, it's only useful to that recipient if he's got an arrangement with the credit card company to accept credit cards. If you send me details of your credit card, I can't do anything with it. I can't do a thing with it. I can't get that money because I don't have an arrangement with that way to deposit that money.
There has to be an agreement that the person who receives the credit card number can effect the transaction with the bank. Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. Well, I think they have. I think the lulav belongs to you if you've paid by check, because it's their prerogative. They could go and get a special clearance maybe beforehand, and it's up to them when they pay in the check. it did once happen to me that I was looking after a chosan on his wedding day, and making sure he gets to the wedding on time, took him to the mikveh and so on, and just as he was getting changed, an hour and a half or so before the kabbalah spun him, I said to him, "Where's the ring? Have you got the ring?" He said, "Yeah, here it is." I said, "Tell me something, have you paid for it?" He says, "Well, no, but the fellow said that the money could wait a bit." And I said, "Well, excuse me, if the ring doesn't belong to you, then maybe you're not going to be legally married today when you put it on your bride's finger." And I made him write out a cheque, and I delivered it to the fellow from whom he bought it before the chuppah. But it was only a cheque, yes. But I think he didn't have the cash available.
There is a question there, isn't it? If you like paying by credit card for things, the same as if you support say another, unless you assume the credit card acceptable for the owner of the lulu.
Yeah, if you say to the fellow, "Okay, I owe you the money," has the kinyan taken place? If you bought your lulu on Eretz Sukkos, and say, "Look, I'll pay you after Yom Tov." He can be makne to you, and then there is a halvah, a din of a loan, but it might be more comforting if you would pay him the money up front. Okay. There are some other questions which relate to emails and faxes in a different light, and that is when you're in different time zones and you want to send an email to America after Shabbos has gone out. You decide to send an email to somebody in America, or a fax to somebody in America, and it's still Shabbos there, because they're 5 hours behind. Or, before Shabbos, you send an email to Israel, or a fax to Israel, and Shabbos has already come in. Are you allowed to do this in such a way that you are doing that which causes a kind of malacha to happen elsewhere where it is Shabbos? And there are a number of poskim who deal with this. There is also, broader than that, the question of if somebody owns a factory and he's in Israel, and he's not allowed to have people working for him on Shabbos, and he's got a factory in New York, and so when Shabbos comes in for him in Israel, he's still got people working for him in New York, and for him it's Shabbos. Is he allowed to do this? So the Chalak HaSiyakim writes about this, the Batel HaChochma writes about this, Rav Harpanas writes in the Nishmas Shabbos, that in general terms, you keep Shabbos according to the time that you are in. And you don't have to worry about other time zones in the world. Your Shabbos lasts for 25 hours from the time the sun sets in London till it becomes nightfall in London. And you don't have to worry too much about what's going on elsewhere. So much so that if you send a fax or an email, in any case, the email wouldn't be picked up by the person by his click till after Shabbos, but the question with the fax arises that if you send somebody a fax, can he handle it? Can he read it? Is it muksa? Because it arrives at his place on Shabbos.
Or have you done a malacha?
Or have you done... Alright, the poskim hold that you haven't done any malacha whatsoever if you cause something to happen elsewhere where it is Shabbos, because you are tied by your own time zone. But I share with Sean where you are, and that's in London.
In this case, so, actually in America, yeah. Shabbos comes in for you, but it's not effective.
Right.
We have a time switch. We do all sorts of things before Shabbos is going to...
Well, time switch is another matter, because you shouldn't be employing people on Shabbos.
Why trick yourself a printer, which is on Shabbos, and by doing so, you will have it Shabbos?
Right. There is a din called Shavisas Kalim. And there's an argument in the Gemara of the Shemishah between Shammai and Hillel about Shavisas Kalim. And we paskin like Hillel that your kelim, your utensils, don't have to rest for you on Shabbos, whatever that means. And that's why we have the principle of time clocks, that you can fix your lighting and your heating with time clocks, because your kelim are doing malacha, but you're not doing anything. You set it before Shabbos, and that's fine. It's as if you light your Shabbos candles, they're burning on Shabbos, the candles. You lit the candles, but you're not doing any malacha on Shabbos. You lit the candles before Shabbos, you left the house, you locked up, and they're burning on Shabbos. Well, you didn't do any malacha. But the fact that they're burning on Shabbos is a result of your malacha, but that malacha was done behetza. It was done when you were allowed to do it. So the general principle in the poskim is that as long as you do something at the time when you are allowed to do something, never mind about what happens anywhere else. Ay, pasnish, that you're having workers working for you on Shabbos when you're in New York, it's not forbidden. you might decide, look, okay, I'm going to close the factory up earlier, so that when my Shabbos comes in Israel, the factory will be closed. But Mi'ikahadin, the poskim say, it's okay. Because over there, it's not Shabbos, and over there, these people are not breaking Shabbos, and your workers will have to keep Shabbos. When it's Shabbos, they will keep Shabbos, they will leave in time for Shabbos. So says the poskim. And so the question is even also with answering machines and other kinds of mechanisms. Reb Moshe Feinstein actually writes in his Tshuvos that the heter of time switches should not be breached to the extent that you're insulting Shabbos, and factories could be running even on Shabbos by automation. And he says we should try not to extend the heter of time switches beyond lighting and heating. But in the yeshiva world, they've said that his psak was afterwards revised, that it can include other things on Shabbos, such as air conditioning and so on and so forth, and it's not strictly limited just to lighting and heat. The question in the poskim which has been brought up, and there's the Sheila Shol, a rabbi in Switzerland who asked this in some detail, can you leave on your fax machine on Shabbos so that you will receive or your answer phone machine on Shabbos in order that messages come in, or business messages come in, and you'll deal with them as soon as Shabbos goes out. I have a friend who runs a textile business, and he had in fact a customer who is Jewish, but not keeping Shabbos, who he found was faxing him on Shabbos to place his orders, because he had more time on Shabbos, so that the orders would be processed on Sunday when my friend's shop was open, and he was closed on Sunday. So my friend phoned him up and said to him, look, do me a favour, please don't fax me on Shabbos. I don't like it. I'd rather you don't deal with me at all. I don't want to take faxes for you on Shabbos. But the Ikka Adin, if somebody faxes you on Shabbos, you can't help it. Or can you? Do you have to switch off your machine? So the post can deal with this and say, you don't have to switch it off. There is actually one posek who says you should switch it off, and that was Dain Padva. He writes in Chelek Gimel, in his Shubas Cheshav Eifod, where he's asked a number of questions about faxes. He likes to go lechumra on this. Do you have to switch it off? If it does come, are you allowed to read it? Are you allowed to send to a place where it's already Shabbos? And also, if it's cheaper for you to send a fax during the night because of cheaper telephone rates, can you operate your fax on a timer to send faxes, not now, but during the night, even when Shabbos has already come in? And on those, well, on that last question there, a few poskim who write, who frown upon it very much, and Dain Padva says, osur. However, there are other poskim who say that there is no problem at all. The question arose, of course, with answering machines, and of course, can you have a message on your answer phone machine to say, please leave a message, because then you're actually asking the guy to do something on Shabbos, which is a malacha, amir alakum. Please leave a message. Well, the Sefer Nishmas Shabbos says it's allowed. The Afsha Omer Belashon Bakosha, and he writes in brackets, please, Pei Lamed Yod Ayin Zayin. He says, even if you say, please leave a message on the tape, he says, Lo Choshev Ki'ilu Mavakesh Me'akum Shiasu Malach. It's not regarded as asking a goy to do a malacha on Shabbos. Because when the Akum, when the goy is masking Loma to say something and to leave a message, he's doing it al das atzmo. That's entirely up to him. Many people, when they hear an answer phone machine, they just put the phone down. And it's not because of doing you a tova that you're saying, please leave a message. It's like he's switching on a light for you. Or shalichus, right? That he's a messenger for you. In the way that you'd ask a guy normally in the form of a shalichus. It's not regarded like that he's running a business for you or anything like that. When he leaves a message for you, it's entirely for his own benefit and not for the benefit of you. And therefore he allows it. Nevertheless, I heard from a time Halpin Shlita, he suggests that if you leave messages on your answer phone, don't say, please leave a message after the tone. Say, if you wish to leave a message after the tone, then we will contact you as soon as possible. So if you say, if you wish to leave a message, then you're certainly not asking him to do anything in terms of a malacha.
Yeah, but what happens if you've got, say, a son or daughter in Israel, especially in the height of the summer, where Shabbos goes out here 10:30 and there goes out our time, say 6:30, and they're going to bed and wouldn't be able to speak to you, so they phone up, leave a message on the answer, and you can actually hear it.
Yeah, you can hear it. Or when the baby is born.
That's okay, you'll say.
Yes. They can say, Mazel Tov, a baby has been born 10 minutes ago, on Motzei Shabbos, but for you it's still Shabbos. Mazel Tov, mother and baby are fine, perfectly allowed. Pasnish, well, there are certain poskim who say it's correct to put the answer phone machine away or the fax machine away in a locked room where nobody can hear it, nobody can see it, because they say it's a zilzil to Shabbos. That's also something which is brought in this Sefer Nishmas Shabbos. We're worried about, it might be an insult for Shabbos. Pasnish, you're sitting around the table, Shabbos Shudas, you're singing Zemiras, and suddenly the answer phone comes on and the fax comes in and leaps away. There is the question of, is the fax muktzah? Because the paper, it's a drasha on its own. Is there a din of nolad because it wasn't read before Shabbos? is it a man-made nolad? It's not really called a nolad, like the guy who made the shoes, or the guy who baked the bread. So that's in the poskim say it's not really nolad. Or do we say that the paper, the fax paper, was muktzah when Shabbos came in because you wouldn't use the paper for anything else? Therefore, it's muktzah machmas chisaron kis. Like a writing pad, you wouldn't use the paper for anything else. And it was there in the fax machine, and it was part of a roll, and the whole roll is muktzah. Therefore, when it comes out in terms of a new fax and it's cut, can you handle it on Shabbos? Because it was muktzah during Ben Hashmoshes, during twilight, therefore it must be muktzah for the whole of Shabbos. If it's a business fax, I'm glad that you can't read it. But if it's a personal fax, Dan Ehrentroy says, and in fact the Shelas Shol writes in his Shuvas, that fax is not... Well, he says, better not handle it, but you can read it. Read it, but keep your hands behind your back. And interestingly enough, his son of the Shela Shol writes Severus Ha'orus in the Truist, which he publishes as well, to discuss whether that fax is muktzah or not, to compare it with the guy who made the shoes and the guy who made the bread. And the maskana is that maybe it's not muktzah at all. Okay. Right, if a guy, well actually there is a machlokas in the Rishonim already about this, with the guy making bread, but the poskim, the Ramah, is generally makel. If you get from a guy bread which was baked, there's also the question of was it started before Shabbos came in? And then we might be more lenient, like the shoe repairer or the shoemaker. But it's one of the deliberations. And the minag is the hokel, if a guy baked bread, if you can eat it on Shabbos. It's not called nolad, because nolad is really the fruit fallen from the tree, or the chicken which had laid the egg. That's the sort of nolad we're talking about, primarily on Yom Tov, and that's not called man-made nolad. That is nolad by nature, where we're more strict in terms of muktzah. But it's a big inyan, and I don't want to get too much into it now. How much time we got? Only another few moments, so I won't be too long on this. The question of telephone messages through different time zones is dealt with by the Shelas Shol and the Nishmas Shabbos, and he writes, "Da'afa Yisrael Atzmo, even the Jew himself, is mancha etzlahu chol, because it's still a weekday for him, mutar la'asos malacha l'idei kocho, but medina acheres, he can do a malacha on his own in another country." And then he writes in brackets, "Kagon nichtov fax, hey ayin kuf samach," he spells it, or telex, he says, "L'mokem shu achshav nichtav nichtav alidei kocho, by he himself, mokem shu achshav husham Shabbos." There, over there, it's already Shabbos. The chiyuv shivi soso mimalochu rakbim koma. The chiyuv, the duty of resting from malocha, is only when you're in the place itself, l'fi ofek shalo, according to your own time zone. In Cain, so, kol shekein demutav malocha alidei amu la'akum. All the more so, if you want to phone the guy. For example, let's say your daughter is staying in a hotel in Israel, Shabbos has already come in, and you forgot to phone her up to say good Shabbos or to tell her a nice piece of family news. Can you phone up the hotel management where you know a guy will answer the phone? They have Palestinians manning the phones in some of these hotels, unfortunately. And then, if you ring the hotel, tell my daughter this or that, do we have a din there of Amir La'akum? Because you can't ask a guy to do a malacha for you on Shabbos, except in certain circumstances. So he says, that is allowed, that is not called Amir La'akum, because Amir La'akum only applies when you yourself can't do the malacha. When you yourself can do the malacha, then there's no din of Amir La'akum that you can't ask the guy. On the other hand, it might be a bit of an insult to Shabbos, so you phone up this hotel, it's a Jewish place, and the phone is ringing, and it's Shabbos already. He said it's nice to avoid it. No, that's the way. So we were talking before about Minag Yisrael Torahi. We don't necessarily know in the future whether email might change everything, because we might wish to keep certain traditions of old. But I was thinking to myself, what is, perhaps in conclusion, the moral idea we can learn? What is the moral idea we can learn? This idea of sending emails, this instant communication, which our older generation don't even understand yet. How can we give ourselves some moral lesson? We've explored certain halachas, spoken about chometz, get, and prusbul, and bezdin. But if we just think of a moral idea, there's a very interesting concept I've noticed. When it comes to email, more perhaps than any other communication, is that once you've done that click, it's gone. You can't change it anymore. You can't bring it back again. That momentous click, you know, when you write a letter, you've signed it, okay. You make the photocopy, you put it in the envelope, you sealed it, you put it in your out tray, you put a stamp on. Until the time that you've posted it, from the time you've written it, there's a sort of time lag when you can change your mind. Oh no, I didn't write that, did I? I better change it. Or you've discovered that you've made a mistake, so you're going to change it. With email, it's all changed now. It's different. Once you've clicked it, it's gone. That's it. You can't change it anymore. And that is, in fact, what the Chofetz Chaim writes in the Dinim of Lashon Hara. Once you've said that Lashon Hara, you can't take it back anymore. You've done the damage. You've caused some harm to somebody, and it spreads like wildfire throughout the community to such an extent that it's extreme minds. There will be people who heard about it, and you don't know which people heard about it. The damage is done. You can't do anything about it anymore. So I was thinking maybe that's an idea which we can appreciate, perhaps the severity of Lashon Hara, when we think about when we're clicking that button on the email. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to me so patiently.